Oh my god, you guys. It's oh snapped. Yay. I've been wanting to do something about Snap since we started a podcast. Oh, and then yeah. We kind of went like not just Snapped with Killer Queens, and we love it. But we thought it was high time for a Snapped recap show.
Well, and it's kind of going back to our roots. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like we're going back to everybody's roots. Like, how many people do you know that, like, and since we've started this podcast, I've had friends be like, how come we've never, like, sat around and talked about true crime before? Because I love it. I always watch Snapped. Like, that's the thing. I watch the Sunday
marathon of Snapped.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are.
Here we are.
So if you love Snapped and you don't have friends to talk about it with, we are your gals.
Mm-hmm. We're going to be your best friends about it.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Should we just jump right on into it?
I think so.
Okay, let's do it. So, and we're starting from the beginning, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Season 1, episode 1.
It does not get better than this.
It doesn't. And you want to talk about hard to find episodes.
Oh, yes. But thank you to Brittany Buell for helping our little booties.
Oh, she's our shining star. Yes. She found the episodes for us. And you can buy season, like the super early seasons, I think really just on eBay is where we're finding them.
You cannot find them digitally anywhere.
Mm-mm. Try finding season episode or season, whoa, wow, season 1 and 2 together. That's $200, you guys.
It's insanity.
It's crazy for the DVD set.
But let's do all that for you so you don't have to buy them. We'll just recap it. No big deal.
Exactly. We got you covered.
Her life was a fairy tale.
I walked into Celeste's closet and there was 1,000 pair of shoes. It was unbelievable.
She had a rich husband.
Stephen Beer gave her everything. He literally gave her millions.
Two beautiful daughters and loyal friends.
I felt a kinship with her, if I could talk to her.
But for Celeste Beard, it wasn't enough. And she'd do anything to get more. Insatiable greed, a lesbian love triangle, betrayal, and murder, next on Snapped.
So we start with, of course, season 1, episode 1, Celeste Beard Johnson. Born in 1963 in Camarillo, I knew I was going to do it. It's not Amarillo, Texas. It's Camarillo, California.
Camarillo by morning.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Celeste got married when she was a teen and married her boyfriend, Craig Bratcher. On February 6th, 1981, she had twin girls, Jennifer and Christina.
There's a lot of twins in this. In episode 3, when we get to that, there's twins.
Yes. Crazy. Insane. Yeah, so they were very, very young. They ended up getting pregnant. They got married directly thereafter, finding out that she was pregnant.
Sure.
Her marriage was far from happy. Mary Lou Gibbs, Celeste's friend, said that her first husband was into drugs and drinking and he became abusive.
Mm.
Celeste didn't want to be stuck in that sort of marriage and left Craig and her 7-year-old daughters behind, but said that one day she would get them back.
I don't know how I feel about that.
When I was watching it, I was like, ooh.
Like, do what you got to do to get out of an abusive relationship. Absolutely, 100%.
Of course.
Don't leave your kids.
No, and that's the thing. I don't know if Craig was abusive to the children, but if he is an alcoholic, I don't know if he was an alcoholic, but if he was into drugs and drinking, that's not exactly a safe environment to leave two small girls.
No, and if he is abusive to you, what makes you think that he's not going to take that out on the kids when he doesn't have you there anymore?
Exactly. I just feel like I'm not a mother yet, but when you become a mother, things sometimes become not just about you. It's about your children.
Yeah. You couldn't. I don't think there's anything you could do to make me leave my kids.
Yeah, I think that that's like the, it's a pretty common feeling. And I don't know that Celeste exhibited that.
Yeah. And, you know, just to be clear, guys, just wait till you get to the rest of the story.
Exactly. This is kind of, we're not judging Celeste on just this. It's the overall.
Yeah, because again, like, you know, I don't know what it's like to be in that kind of a situation in a marriage. I've been in an abusive relationship before, but I don't know what it's like, you know, once you have kids involved and stuff like that. So we're not saying that everybody who has to get out, you know, they're bad or anything like that. It's just wait till you hear about this lady.
Exactly. Dr. Helen Smith, who we love.
Oh my gosh, I love Helen Smith.
She's a forensic psychologist. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. Hair looks great.
Oh yeah.
She says some amazing things. Love her. She said Celeste probably saw herself as a good mother, someone who would go out kind of like on a mission and better herself. She would go out into society and find someone to help her get her kids back. Preferably someone who had money or power. Preferably someone who had both.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess as she's saying, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm playing devil's advocate now, but if Celeste is leaving an abusive relationship, and she doesn't have a way, like what she's saying here is, if she's like leaving, and so now she's in a situation where maybe she doesn't have a place to live or a job or whatever, and she's like, I haven't seen him be abusive to the kids so far, and I don't have enough money to raise them, maybe? I don't know.
I feel like what I know about Celeste, based on seeing the entire episode, Celeste probably... maybe in her mind was like, look, I can find a man to take care of me way easier if it's just me.
Okay. Uh-huh.
If it's her plus the two girls. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think she's got to lock somebody in before she can be like, oh, and by the way.
That makes sense. Yeah. Good point.
That's just what I was thinking. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just based on the kind of person that she seems like she is.
Yeah, I think you're totally right.
For the next several years, Celeste drifted from town to town looking for her perfect man. In the spring of 1993, Celeste took a job at the Austin Country Club. Dr. Helen Smith said that Celeste was calculated in her search to find a man with money and power, and she went to places where she could find old money, the country club, which is actually really smart.
Yeah, it's really smart.
It's very Dennis Reynolds, handsome companion.
Yeah. If I ever leave my husband, I'm getting a job at the country club.
Heck yeah. I mean, that's the perfect place to find somebody like that.
Exactly. You know, they've got money.
Well, yeah. The men at the country club noticed Celeste. She was good looking and she was young. One man who definitely took notice was 68-year-old millionaire media tycoon Steve Beard. Rick Wines, former homicide detective, said Stephen Beard was a self-made financial wizard. He founded a television station, and when he sold it, the rumor around was that he got $15 million for it.
Dang.
It's not too shabby, Steve.
Not too shabby for Rachel.
And in 1993, that's basically $3 billion trillion.
Yeah, exactly.
Today, yeah.
Yeah.
Ray McEachern?
Mm-hmm.
Friend of Stephen Beard said that Steve was more like Jackie Gleason than anybody he'd ever met.
Okay, I'm glad you explained this. I was like, who's Jackie Gleason?
Yes. Agreed. While I was watching it, I was like, heard of him. Don't know anything about him. So Jackie Gleason was an American comedian, actor, writer, composer, and conductor. A quadruple, what is a...
Quintuple?
Quintuplet threat.
Yeah.
He developed a style and characters from growing up in Brooklyn, New York. He was known for his brash visual and verbal comedy. And he was on the television television series, The Honeymooners. So he was just kind of, what I'm gathering from this is kind of maybe a Chris Farley type of guy, like physical comedy, real hilarious, super funny.
Kind and that was larger Steve. Than life.
Yes.
Personality.
Exactly. Okay. He said that Steve was really outgoing and really funny, but Steve's personal life had around that time taken a turn. His wife of 50 years had passed away.
My God. 50 years.
When he was 18, they got married.
Yeah. Because he's 68. Yeah.
A long time to be with somebody. She died of terminal brain cancer. I know. Susie Spencer, author of The Fortune Hunter, said he was a very lonely man. I had one person tell me just before his wife, Elise, died, he said, what am I going to do? Who's going to take care of me? Steve and Celeste meeting seemed like it was meant to be. Even though there was a huge age difference, they hit it off immediately.
I'm sure they did.
Well, I mean,
I just feel like Celeste is like,
cha-ching.
Mm-hmm. And almost like a Playboy bunny with Hugh Hefner. Like, clearly there is no real love or attraction there.
Well, it's a business deal.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's what Celeste is after.
Exactly. And I feel like it's like one of those cartoons where as soon as she saw Steve, it was just dollar signs in her eyeballs.
Oh, yeah. Well, because like totally nothing against Steve. Seems like a great guy, but she's how old? In her like 30s or whatever?
Mm.
And he's 68. She's after his money. That's just all there is to it. Like,
nothing against him.
Yeah, you can tell that's just what she's going for.
Exactly.
And his daughter knew it. Like, everybody around them knew
everybody
it.
Knew.
It wasn't a secret that that's what it was about. And I think Steve was just happy to have somebody around. He wanted a handsome companion.
Exactly. And boy, did he get it. But since his wife had so recently died, he wanted to keep the new relationship a secret. So he moved Celeste into his mansion as a housekeeper. Becky Beard, Steve's daughter, was like,
Yeah.
She said the way that she found out about Celeste and her father being more than a housekeeper and boss was during the 1993 Super Bowl. Becky called the hotel that Steve was staying at, and she asked for her father's room. Celeste answered the phone. And she said that's when it hit her. What is the housekeeper doing at the Super Bowl in my father's room?
Also, if you're trying to keep it a secret, Celeste, why would you answer the hotel phone?
Right?
Like, it could be anybody.
I mean, maybe Steve had a really particular way of liking things to be tidied up, even though the hotel offers housekeeping.
Yeah, but you can't trust that. It's not going to be right.
You got to bring your own housekeeper.
Yeah, for sure. She sleeps on the floor. It's not a big deal.
Exactly. She sleeps on a ball on the floor. Wait, in a ball on the floor.
On a ball?
On a ball in the floor. That's literally what I said. In a ball on the floor. I was trying to go for a friend's thing there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Once the relationship was made public, Steve treated Celeste like royalty. Andrea Ball, reporter, said that they would go out and laugh and be that May-December relationship that we all dream of. I did not know what a May-December relationship was.
Me either.
I polled one person who knew what it was, who is our age. That was Brittany. And she was like, yeah, it's a relationship where one person's older than the other. And I was like, that's exactly what it is. I just Googled it. So it says a May-December romance is an old age term for an amorous relationship between two people with a considerable age difference. So May would be a springtime, summertime age.
And then like December a spring is, chick with a...
Yes.
Old person. I don't know what you'd call a winter. What are they called?
With a winter widow.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Wow, I didn't know that. Okay.
Well, now we know. We've learned two things so far.
Yeah, this is the most... We are going to have to put this podcast under educational.
Exactly. Free education.
Mm-hmm.
Allison Wetzel, district attorney, said, I think he liked the idea of having someone young, pretty, and vivacious around him, and she was someone who had never had financial security in her life and wanted that for herself. So, it looks like Celeste found her knight in shining armor, but her two daughters needed rescuing too.
Mm-hmm.
By July 1996, thanks to Celeste not giving up and Steve's fat bank account, Celeste's daughters were living with their mama.
Yay!
Celeste was getting everything she ever wanted from Steve. On February 8th, 1995, so I guess right before the girls moved in, Celeste and Steve were married. Becky, Steve's daughter, said that she went to the wedding to support her father, but she vowed that she would not speak to Celeste at all.
Hmm.
I don't blame her, though.
Yeah.
It's just, you know...
Well, because they're like, what, almost the same age?
Right?
It's just weird, and like, you know that she's not here out of genuine love and care for your father.
Well, it's like she's a snake in the grass, and yeah. She saw that.
Yeah, and you don't want to see him get screwed over.
Exactly. A lot of Steve's friends felt the same way. Ray, Steve's friend, thought that she was just using Steve for money, that he felt like she was money hungry, and... He said, when I looked into her eyes, it just looked like dollar signs. This is a big, big mistake.
Man, that sucks. Because it's like everybody around you is like, dude.
Well, but I think a lot of us have been in a situation similar to this. Maybe it wasn't like money driven, but you can see a relationship maybe play out before. And you know, in front of you and be like, ooh, this is not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a good idea. But you can't say anything.
No, I mean, he married her, so.
Yeah.
You can't take that away.
Exactly. Steve's friends and family might have felt like Celeste was a gold digger, but it didn't seem to bother her. Once they were married, Celeste and her daughters basically stepped into a dream. Andrea Ball said that Celeste would buy a new Cadillac the way Andrea or I or you would buy a Reese's peanut butter cup on the way out of the store.
Yeah. It's like, or how, no, I even give more thought to, can I add the guacamole on at the Mexican restaurant? Like, I don't know. Do I really need to spend an extra $3? But she's just like buying Cadillacs. Like,
yeah. That. Oh, right. I think I need a new Cadillac.
Yeah, exactly.
Crazy. Ray said that he walked into Celeste's closet and saw 800, maybe 1,000 shoes in it. It was unreal. He said Imelda Marcos didn't have anything on Celeste.
Who's that?
I know. So I had watched a Golden Girls episode and Dorothy referenced Imelda Marcos. So I've definitely looked her up before, but I went ahead and put a little excerpt here.
Okay.
So Imelda Romualdez Marcos is a Filipino politician who was First Lady of the Philippines for 21 years, during which she and her husband are widely believed to have illegally amassed a multi-billion U.S. dollar personal fortune, the bulk of which still remains uncovered.
Hmm.
Unrecovered. Imelda Marcos left behind at least 1,220 pairs of shoes, along with a vast collection of clothes and accessories, when she fled with her husband, President Ferdinand Marcos, during a 1986 uprising.
Huh. All right. Didn't know any of that either.
1,220 pairs of shoes.
I have 9.
I mean, I have a lot.
Maybe.
But I don't have that much. And I feel like my husband should definitely thank his lucky stars that I don't have more of a spending
Could
habit.
Could be a lot worse, yeah.
Right?
Were the pictures in the show, because it was like they kept showing a closet that had like individual
like
little
totes.
Like totes. Yeah.
With shoes inside
with
of
shoes
them.
With shoes in it. Was that her real closet?
I think so. And okay. it was literally like Beauty and the Beast when she walks into the library.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, floor to ceiling, just shelves with totes of shoes in it. Very well organized.
Very. But I mean, if you have shoes like that, you're going to need, because they come with like little, probably like dust bags and stuff like that you put them in.
Yeah. And you don't want them to just like, especially if it needs to hold its shape somehow or whatever, you don't want stuff to get on top of it. You want to protect it.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't do that with the shoes that I have, and I pay for it because I got some for real cheap on Amazon and they are stained now because they rubbed up against something else. I don't know.
Exactly.
Sad stuff. Celeste could shop. The girl loved to shop.
Mm-hmm.
She's obviously a woman after my own heart, but she didn't just enjoy it. It became an obsession for her, an addiction. And obviously, you can literally be addicted to anything.
Sure.
But Celeste said that it became a new vice for her.
Yeah.
She said when she was depressed or upset, she'd go shopping. Helen Smith said that for certain people, when they feel alone, they go shopping and it fills that void sometimes. The thing is, though, and this is sometimes how I felt if I'm like, you know, let's say the start of the quarantine or something. I was like, I just want to shop because it gives you that rush, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't last. So then you kind of have to keep, either have to keep it up or find something else, I guess. I don't know. Maybe make yourself actually happy.
It's also something that you feel like you can control. Like a lot of things like that, even if it's like alcohol or drugs or whatever it is.
Sure.
It's like you have that one thing that you know you control. I decide if I'm going to buy something. I decide if I'm, you know, what I'm going to buy or whatever. And it kind of helps that like, out of control feeling around you, like everything else.
Yeah, very true. But as her spending spiraled out of control, Steve threatened to divorce her. So naturally, Celeste threatened to kill herself.
Mm-hmm.
The threat landed her in St. David Psychiatric Facility. Steve hoped that she'd get help for addiction, but he thought the break from each other would be a big help on their marriage.
Yeah, absence makes the heart grow fonder.
But poor, poor, sweet Steve was so wrong.
Oh, no.
While at St. David's, Celeste met fellow patient Tracy Tarleton. Celeste said talking to Tracy made her feel like she could talk to her about anything. She didn't feel bad or feel judged talking to her. Their bond was immediate and intense. There's speculation about whether the relationship was purely platonic or romantic. Tracy has been completely open about being gay and thought that Celeste was bisexual at least, according to Gary Cobb, assistant district attorney. Helen Smith said that Tracy thought that Celeste was someone who felt like she cared about her, would do things with her, and understood her on an emotional level. Whether or not they were in a romantic relationship, they seemed to benefit from their relationship for sure.
Hmm.
In April 1999, Celeste and Tracy were discharged. They stayed in touch and they would go shopping together. When they went to parties, or they went to parties together, they went to brunches, they went to dinners, they spent a lot of time together. The spring of 1999 was Celeste's moment. She was back with Steve and her daughters, and she had a brand new bestie. A friend that she could tell her innermost secrets to. A friend who she could tell anything, but what no one knew was that the friends shared a terrible secret. A secret that had nothing to do with shopping and everything to do with murder.
That's a clever girl.
Yeah, it is. Whether or not the many rumors about the fact that Tracy and Celeste had a romantic relationship going on, and some people said that they saw them kissing, were true, confiding in Tracy helped Celeste curb her spending habit, and it got her family back on track. I guess a little bit. I mean, they were still going shopping together.
Right, yeah, but maybe she wasn't buying as much. Like, spending as much.
Like, I only spent $90,000 this month.
Yeah, it's like not a big deal.
It's chump change.
I mean, so I guess she just never really talked to Steve.
Apparently not.
Like, never came to him with anything, seems like.
I mean,
like, didn't view him as a friend.
Right. She definitely didn't confide in him. She needed somebody outside, like, to outsource that.
Yeah. Which, you know, in a marriage, you can't put everything on your spouse.
But you should share. I mean, this is a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. You would think they would have, you know, talked about stuff at some point.
On October 2nd, 1999, at 2:57 a.m., emergency dispatchers were called and received a strange 911 call.
The call came in from 3900 Toro Canyon Road. The caller was Steve Beard.
What is the phone number you're calling from?
My guts just came out of my stomach.
Sergeant Greg Truitt said he was holding his hand over his stomach and you could see intestines or whatever protruding through his fingers.
That is so horrible.
Can you imagine?
Oh my God.
And in the call, he says, my guts just came out of my stomach.
Yeah, God, that poor guy. Like, can you imagine the fear, like,
this literally just happened to me.
Yeah, like, what? There's no way I can survive this. Like, you would have to be thinking that.
Oh, totally. It's just, it's one of those, it has to be like a surreal out-of-body experience to be like, look down and see something coming out of your
body. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Ooh. At first, he wasn't sure what it was, but then he found a clue. Sergeant Pruitt said that Steve was a rather large man and that he thought at first that maybe some stitches had come loose from a previous surgery, but then a deputy informed him that a shotgun shell had been located. EMTs quickly airlifted Steve to Bracken Ridge Hospital to begin surgery. Investigators back at the home began going through the crime scene. Rick Wines, investigator, said that there were some drawers pulled out, but it didn't appear to be a burglary. In a separate wing of the house, and this is how you know it's a mansion.
Right, yeah.
In the east wing.
You never go in the west wing.
Exactly. In a separate wing of the house, detectives found Celeste and her daughter, Christina, sound asleep.
That's so weird. Don't you think?
Right.
He's been shot?
But how big is the house?
I guess that's true. If it's a whole separate wing, it's just strange.
They didn't hear it or something. Yeah. I don't know. Sergeant Pruitt said that Celeste started screaming and got hysterical for a few minutes. So, Celeste didn't seem too worried about who the shooter was, but detectives were. Christina, Celeste's daughter, told detectives to check out Tracy. Gary Cobb said one of the first things they asked her was, do you have a shotgun? And Tracy was like, yep, I've got one, and gave them permission to take the shotgun. And they realized quickly that the shotgun was used in the shooting of Steve Beard.
Yeah. Did she not think they could trace that?
I don't know.
I mean,
and you would think if they're talking to her, because of course they would go up to her and be like, hey, they would tell her why they're talking to her. They're not just going to,
yeah, you know, they're not like, hey, we're in the neighborhood, we're just like taking a poll, like,
do you have a shotgun?
Yeah, do you have a shotgun and can we have it?
It's literally, if somebody, if I knew that I was involved in something and then somebody came up to me and was like, hey, I want to talk about that something, but also, do you have a murder weapon? And I'd be like, yeah, you can have it.
Yeah.
I'm totally safe. Nobody suspects a thing.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know. Tracy admitted that she shot Steve, but it seemed like something was eating her up inside, something that she wasn't sharing with police. Police thought that Tracy hadn't acted alone, but Tracy was not talking, so they booked her on a charge of felony injury to an elderly person and locked her booty up. Felony injury to an elderly person.
Elderly person. I was like, I mean,
yikes.
How, he's not that old, like.
I know.
I'm not looking forward to the day when I'm going to be called elderly, I guess.
Felony charge, or a charge of felony injury to the crypt keeper.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
it's just harsh.
Come on, guys.
Ugh. On February 17th, Steve Beard was released from Brackenridge Hospital.
He recovered. Like, he that's amazing.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And he was placed in the custody and care of Celeste. Knowing what I know, I'm so upset for Steve.
But also, hang on. Like, the police know for sure that Tracy shot him. Tracy is Celeste's best friend, maybe even lover. We're not thinking Celeste has anything to do with this. We're thinking Steve is going to be safe in the care of Celeste.
Shouldn't? Okay. I get that Steve and Celeste are married. Did they talk to Steve at all? Did they say, hey, do you feel comfortable? Maybe you should go with Becky, your daughter. Maybe she could take care of you.
Yeah, maybe Becky should take care of you. Anybody else. Right? Maybe you should stay in a rehab facility. He could pay for a nice one.
Yeah, he could. Like, well, hopefully. I mean, Celeste maybe cleared him out.
That's true.
Celeste cleaned and cared for him almost hourly. She kept visitors to a minimum, and she even refused to let cops question him.
Of course.
Why would she want the cops to talk to him?
Yeah.
But less than a week after being released, Steve died from a staph infection in his gunshot wound.
Yeah.
Ray, Steve's friend, said that he was shocked. He was like, I just saw him 2 weeks ago. And Steve was in a perfect mood. He was up, walking around. He had his strength back.
Yeah, it's like, how did he improve so much that he was released from the hospital and then he goes home and it just like takes this huge turn that it obviously should not have taken.
Exactly. I mean, he was 100% on the road to recovery.
Right.
Steve's death put the heat on Tracy. Her felony injury charge turned into a felony murder charge, but she still refused to talk. Investigator Rick Wines said that he asked Tracy what she was doing that night, what her relationship with Celeste was, and she would just give answers that were open-ended. Like, she was very vague about everything.
Yeah, just kind of dancing around it.
After Steve died, Celeste went out frequently and chatted up eligible bachelors. So her husband's death did not really fit. You know, she's got her eye on the prize. She's got to get somebody that's going to take care of her still, right?
Thank you, next.
Exactly. She soon after found a new young husband, bartender Spencer Cole Johnson. So Helen Smith is like right on the money here, right?
Yeah, she is.
She had the older man with money, and now she's going to go back to the younger man who has sex. Just another way to fulfill whatever desire she has.
Andrea Ball said that she waited maybe 5 months. The heart can heal quickly.
Right.
Yeah. I love that. Tracy soon learned that Celeste had remarried, and that was not okay with Tracy.
Well, yeah, because I'm sure Tracy thought she was doing something to make it so that they could be together.
Yes. So Celeste had an inheritance in the millions, a young, hot husband. It seemed like Celeste had it all once again. Until one day, Tracy was in jail reading the newspaper in her cell and spotted something. It was Celeste's wedding announcement. Tracy then realizes that she's been tainted by Celeste's octopus ink.
Oh my God, she has.
She then decides that she wants to clear her name, and she identifies with Stephen Beard as a victim, but realized that she, like, Tracy wasn't the only victim in this. Stephen was, which it took her a while to get there. I don't know how she didn't get there sooner.
Right. I wonder if Celeste was telling her that, like, Steve was abusive.
I guarantee she was doing that.
Yeah, something like that to make Tracy think like, I need to basically rescue her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that's Celeste's MO. She needs a knight in shining armor. She needs somebody to take care of her always.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, Tracy wouldn't talk at all. But then after she found out that Celeste had gotten remarried, she wouldn't hush.
Well, you opened the floodgates now.
Exactly. According to Tracy, Steve and Celeste's marriage wasn't based on true love.
What?
I know. Shocking.
Oh my God.
Gary Cobb said that she had a sex schedule with Mr. Beard and she would expect things in return. Material things. Material things that she thought had so much value.
No.
Didn't really have any value at all.
None. I am confused a little bit.
Okay.
Because she's married to him.
Yes.
And she just goes shopping anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But is he giving her an allowance?
I think,
and it's based on sexual favors. Like,
I don't know. Maybe it was one of those things because we can't know exactly what kind of situation or arrangement they had. Mm-hmm. But maybe she's shopping, right?
Yeah.
And Steve's like, "Hey, you haven't done anything. Haven't had the nookie. Mm-hmm. We haven't. What is it? What do they call it on the dating game or the
make whoopee?
Yes.
Yeah.
We haven't made whoopee in a long time. Credit card canceled."
Hmm.
Maybe froze the bank account. I don't know.
Yeah.
There have to be ways that he would take that, you know.
Yeah, because, I mean, it just seems like she would just buy whatever she wanted anyway. So, I don't really know how sex was, like, leverage in that situation. But, yeah, maybe there was, like, he would offer to give her more.
Yeah.
Or something. I don't know.
I have no idea. Tracy said.
Oh, my God.
I hate it. I hate it.
Yeah.
Tracy said that there was Sunday suck day.
God.
Apparently, yeah. Celeste gave Steve the best blowjays he'd ever had in his life.
Well, good for her.
Yeah. Celeste apparently also had a foolproof way of making sure Steve was in bed by 8 p.m. so she could do whatever she wanted to after that. She would substitute his vodka with Everclear. So Steve was a vodka drinker, but she would give him an Everclear drink instead. And that, coupled with the drugs that she was giving him, would make him pass out cold.
That's horrible. She's like, that's horrible. She's drugging her husband.
Yes, to like get away from him.
Yeah.
If what Tracy was saying was true, it would definitely make Celeste manipulative B-word. But that's not illegal. Even in Texas.
That was my favorite line in this whole thing. The narrator,
such a
like,
clever girl.
Yes. I was like, ooh, get her.
I love it. I love it, love it, love it. Attempted murder, however, that is illegal.
Yep.
And Tracy said that Celeste cooked up a plan to get Steve out of the picture. She apparently looked up a recipe book for botulism and apparently cooked up some botulism by taking a lot of ground meat and sticking it in the sun. And supposedly, they made chili with it.
Oh, God.
Celeste put it on Steve's chili dog, and Steve ate the whole thing and told her it was delicious. And Celeste was mad about that because the botulism did not work.
Yeah.
Because Steve didn't get sick at all.
Yeah, he was just like, fine.
Yes. He was just like, thank you, sir. I'll have another.
Yeah, exactly.
A couple months later, Tracy claimed that Celeste went to her again and said that she was desperate. Steve had to die or Celeste would. Celeste convinced Tracy that if Steve didn't die, Celeste would either kill herself or Steve would harm her. So if Tracy didn't do anything, she completely lost Celeste.
That's horrible.
Right? I mean, so manipulative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's just evil.
Exactly. Just
everybody around her is a pawn.
Oh, yes.
There is no person around her that means anything to her.
No. It's just, what can I get from you?
Yeah.
So the plan eventually worked, but Celeste was the one who killed Steve, not Tracy. According to Tracy, Steve's staph infection was not what killed him. It was Celeste's hands. Ray, Steve's friend, said that when Celeste was changing Steve's bandages, Celeste would go outside and get her hands super muddy and then put everything she could think of on the wound to get Steve's wound infected, and it ended up giving Steve the lethal staph infection.
Golly, that's so awful. And like, who, I guess it was Eileen Wuornos, when we covered her on the other podcast, they said that she was like, what, one of the first, she may have been the first female serial killer not in a caregiving capacity. Like, it's so awful that so many women end up, their like MO of committing murder is in a caregiving capacity. Like, she's supposed to be nursing him back to health, and she's shoving dirty stuff in his wounds to give him an infection. It's so hateful.
It is so hateful. It's so personal.
Yeah.
And the fact that it worked like a charm grosses me out so much.
I know. It's awful.
It's terrible. In exchange to testify against Celeste, Tracy's sentence was reduced to 20 years with a possibility of parole in 10. Prosecutors threw a cornucopia of charges at Celeste, including conspiracy to commit capital murder, a charge that could have resulted in a death sentence. On February 3rd, 2003, Celeste Beard Johnson went to trial for murder. Prosecutors began by telling jurors that there was only one reason Celeste killed Stephen Beard: money. That's pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
They laid out the evidence they had against her and then called Tracy to the stand. Tracy was very believable on stand. According to Allison Weitzel, she didn't try to sugarcoat or minimize her involvement in the shooting. She admitted everything and was real credible and upfront, which jurors totally appreciate.
Yeah, for sure. Because then you're not wondering, can I trust this person? You know, she's trying to distance herself and minimize her involvement and try to throw somebody else under the bus. So maybe she's lying, or we've already caught her in lies before. Like, Tracy was none of that. She just simply did not talk until she did talk and she told the truth.
Yes. And she 100% was like, look, this is what happened. I was totally there. I was involved in this, but because of her. Prosecution tried to get the jury to sympathize with her, saying that she had been manipulated and used in the shooting by Celeste.
Yeah.
Dr. Helen Smith said that women are often the ones that get emotionally attached to people, and she thinks that Tracy got attached after the sexual encounters that they had, and perhaps Celeste was using sex to manipulate that.
Oh, of course.
Again, Celeste's MO.
Yeah.
Then Celeste made a mockery of that relationship when she married Cole Johnson. To drive all of this home, prosecution put Celeste's daughters on the stand to testify against her. And the 22-year-old's testimony was damning.
Mm.
You rarely see cases where children will come in and say something against their parents. The fact that these two articulate young women were willing to come in and give the jurors a virtual laundry list of bad acts that Celeste Beard had committed against Mr. Beard had a huge impact on the jury.
On March 19th, Celeste was found guilty of capital murder. She was sentenced to life in prison. Celeste had absolutely no plans of admitting guilt in Stephen Beard's death.
No.
I will never apologize for Stephen's murder when I had nothing to do with it. And I just hope that Dick wins my appeal, because I know in my heart that if we get a second chance at a trial, that I'll be found not guilty.
It really doesn't matter that... So Celeste and Tracy are located very closely together in different... Or at this point, in different jails.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really matter. Tracy is at the Gatesville unit in Texas. Or the Gatesville unit, Texas Department of Corrections. And Celeste is a half a mile down the road at Mountain View. Despite the distance, they have no contact. And neither does Celeste with her daughters.
I want to call them the Menendez sisters. It just, it breaks my heart that the two people I love more than anything in this world would do this to me.
I cannot, to compare them to the Menendez brothers, like,
yeah,
she's so delusional.
She, yeah, absolutely delusional. Like, what an absolute trash bag of a person.
Yes.
To, like, well, but of course she's not going to admit that she did anything wrong, but... To liken your children just because they testified against you, which I guess in her mind is they got up there and lied and threw her under the bus. I don't know. But what they did was they got up and just explained true things that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And if that adds to your guilt, then that's actually your own fault. It's not your kid's fault. But everything is about her. She can't. She certainly doesn't have unconditional love for her children.
No. And I feel like that's. I mean, here I think that's, we do this all the time, is like diagnosing people with like personality disorders and things. she seems classic narcissist to me because it's not her fault. And if it is, then it's somebody else's because of somebody else. You know, it's like that whole thing where she didn't do it. And if she did, it was somebody else's fault.
Yeah, exactly.
Celeste had everything she could have ever wanted in life.
Yeah.
Like, she went from this kind of like rags to riches type of situation. And I don't understand why it just was not enough for her.
Well, right. And like, okay, if you're not, if you're in a relationship that you're not super duper happy in, like, sorry, but you signed up for that because she never loved Steve.
Mm-mm.
She wanted his money. Mm-hmm. So if that's what you're going to do and you're going to get into a marriage that is completely loveless just so that you can have money, well, you got to deal with that person. Like, sorry, but you got to. And if you don't want to, then get a divorce.
Well, yes.
Lose the money.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure Steve had an ironclad prenup.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, if you decide to have a business deal in the form of a marriage, you got to hold up your end, man.
Like, yeah, that's what you signed up for. Like,
sorry about
it. Too bad.
Yeah. Gary Cobb ends the episode saying, Stephen Beard gave her literally millions and that wasn't enough. Tracy gave her everything she could give, which was primarily love, and that wasn't enough. I'm not sure anything would be enough.
No, it wouldn't. He's right.
And at the end of the episode, there's script on the screen that says, today, Celeste's daughters still live in Texas. They have no contact with their mother.
Yeah, I bet they don't want to have anything to do with her. She's a
trash bag.
She is.
And it is interesting. Like, of course, I would not want anybody to lose or not have a relationship with their parents. Like, that's terrible. I mean, people feel it in many different ways and have that same situation for many different reasons, but I'm glad that, unfortunately for them, that they could see their mother for who she is,
right,
and not drink the Kool-Aid as well.
Yeah,
because I'm sure they aided in Celeste being convicted, and I think that justice was served, and I hope that they feel good about that.
Yeah, I do too.
But that's the end of the episode.
All right. Well, banging first episode of Snapped.
They came in hot.
Yeah, they really did. And when were these? These were like released in 2004, right? They're pretty old.
Yes.
Yeah. So super fun to see, like, you know, the quality and the types of pictures and everything. We have a couple. So at the end of all the episodes, we'll do, I don't know, just like a couple nuggets from the episode. One of them is casting call. So who do you feel like would play Celeste?
Okay. Personally, I think that Melanie Griffith could be a good Celeste.
That would be a good one, yeah. What about Tracy? I'm kind of feeling Kathy Bates for Tracy.
Well, that's a good one.
I just kind of,
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that. I think Tilda Swinton could play all three of them convincingly.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because she's always in everything, and I have no idea that she's ever in anything. But who would be Steve? I feel like the late, great Bob Hoskins probably could have done it.
Or, I mean, or Chris Farley.
Chris Farley.
If he was, you know, kind of like that.
Sure.
Yeah. Jack Black?
Yeah, maybe Jack Black could do it.
If we're going to talk about somebody who's still living.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe Jack Black.
Sure. I like that.
Okay.
So yeah, maybe Melanie Griffith, Kathy Bates, and Jack Black.
Okay. And then definitely Annie McDowell is Dr. Helen Smith.
Oh,
she doesn't need to be cast in the story necessarily, but because of her likeness, I just
feel it's like uncanny.
She is. Yeah, it really is.
Yes.
So follow Osnapped on Instagram, and we'll post, you know, photos for every episode. And you cast it. Tell us who you think they should be, because it's kind of fun. And Lifetime makes a lot of movies. So, you know, if they were going to be in the Lifetime dramatic interpretation of this case, who would play them?
Yes.
They did, especially in these early episodes, they did use like really bad stock photos for some of the elements, almost like a reenactment. So that section is reenactment rejects. And if you guys do watch this episode, you have to see. So, like, when they're talking about Tracy and Celeste's relationship,
possibly being romantic.
Yeah. Is it romantic? Is it not? they have these really bad, like, stock photos of,
like, two women kind of maybe possibly either coming out of an embrace.
Yeah.
Going into an embrace. Yeah. But it's, like, two women kind of touching arms or something.
And they're, like, super zoomed in so you can't see their faces.
The boobies.
Yeah. It's very, they don't pick the best photos. So those were, I was kind of laughing when those came up because I'm like, okay, that's, we could have done better than this.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. So, yeah, that was, I would call that a reenactment reject for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, hit us up on Instagram, leave your comments about the episode as well. And
we'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.